grass at all, I think. Today we are deep in the woods at Teepee Valley in West Wales. It's a glorious sunny day and I'm talking to my friend Axel Winterson. We first met in Totnes Market and it was during our early conversations that I decided that I really wanted to visit Teepee Valley. So just Axel, thank you so much for agreeing to talk with me. I've been really looking forward to coming here and it's just blown my mind completely. Can we start by you just telling me or telling us how you ended up here?
Yeah, well, I was at a rainbow gathering in the Breckford Forest, which isn't far from here. And some people from the valley came to that and suggested we come visit. So we came and visited, stayed a couple of weeks in the Big Lodge. That was 2019. And then kind of late winter, early spring, at the end of that year and the beginning of last year, we came to live here. But before then, I'd been visiting various sort of intentional communities or eco-villages around South England and Wales. So I was kind of into this kind of lifestyle already, but I hadn't really found anywhere that felt suitable for me and my girlfriend until we got here, and it's quite different from a lot of the others we went to. We decided to stay, at least for a while, and over a year later we're still here. Yeah, but it is a nomadic life. I haven't got a place, and I probably won't, and I don't think I'll stay here for forever. Right. But anyway, that's how we ended up here, yeah.
But there's a sort of rule I've picked up, the kind of a rule that if you stay here 5 years, you can actually build a hut.
That's right, yeah, if you wanted to, yeah.
So that would kind of take it from being nomadic to being more settled.
Yeah, if you chose to do that. Of course, most people have.
But it takes something to stay here 5 years. It's a tough way of living, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And not just the physical lifestyle, but, some of the things that make this place great for me is also what make it difficult for many people. You've got more freedom here, but you've also got less clarity as an individual arriving here as to where you stand in the community and how to navigate it. It doesn't have a formal politic, and you have to work it out for yourself, and you find that people throughout the valley have different opinions. Everyone will tell you something slightly different about what you can and can't do, what you should or shouldn't be doing.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's a challenging place to arrive compared to most communities I'd been to. Held your hand through it. You got your place, your work schedule, the allotted time you're allowed to visit, and then sort of booted out. You might be able to come back then for longer if you wanted. And they've got all this sussed, whereas here, it isn't as sussed. You have to suss it. Yeah.
Are you saying that as a good thing or a bad thing or not?
Well, yeah, I'm saying it's for me, it was exactly what I wanted and needed. But I think I can see also the difficult side in it, where when you've got something to ask, you've got to go around and ask lots of different people. There's no form of council here.
Yeah.
People are proud of its anarchy. And I get that. But at the same time, I think there might be a good middle ground between organisation and chaos. And I think this place has, for various reasons, fallen further to the chaos side. And a lot of other communities actually fall further to the organisation side than I like. And I needed a bit more of that chaos and the freedom with it, so that I can come here and within a small set of like loose cultural rules, I can actually do what I want. I can, as long as I'm fitting in with a kind of a basic philosophy of taking care of the earth and not leaving behind a mess, and being kind to my neighbours, and being honest, and not harming things unnecessarily. And that, apart from that, you know, I can make my garden, I can choose where I want to live, I can choose when I wake up, how I want to do things, when, why. And other communities wanted to control me a bit more, kind of be part of their system and their world. Whereas here, there's a lot more room for, you know, individuality.
Yeah, I think it's quite a good system in a way. I can see that it is really tough. But suppose you didn't have any prospect or didn't want to ever own your own home, say, going into a bit of a straight world here that I live in, how things work in the world I live in.
Yeah.
You can actually get to a point where, even though you are living in this chaos, you can live in some order, because you do eventually get to have something that's not your own, but it is yours to a degree.
Yeah.
You're the custodian of it.
Yeah.
And people respect that.
Yeah.
So you do get your own space, but it's not your space. It's not like you own it and you've got the deeds to it, or
you can't sell it or anything like that.
No. And if you move, you can't charge someone to take over. That's no great loss, really, I don't think.
No.
I think that's a positive advantage, really, from where I stand in the world, where, you know, everything's controlled and has monetary value, and it's like compared to what's going on here, it's like a millstone around your neck, really.
Yeah.
So I see both sides of it.
Well, this place, it really has its own organic jurisdiction. I don't think the coppers come down here very much at all. And if things go wrong, or there's a total nutter turn up that's causing havoc, because we do get some people who have got some real loose ends and can be violent or something.
Mm.
I've experienced, even in my stay in the Big Lodge, 3 or 4, 5 months in the Big Lodge, like a couple really difficult characters that needed to be dealt with one way or another.
Yeah.
And that was done by the people.
Yeah.
Yeah, not with unnecessary violence, but at certain points the community has come together organically just by people knocking around each other's doors and talking.
Yeah.
That gradual process of Chinese whispers that leads to people gaining a sense of autonomous action, and then...
Yeah, it kind of depends on a sort of fairly strong ethos amongst the established residents that pervades the whole place, really, doesn't it? And so that's the overriding sort of feeling that there is in the place. So I've picked that up just in the short time I've been here, that there's a strong ethos of how this place operates.
Yeah.
And a lot of tolerance and a lot of kindness and a huge generosity. But like you say, there are always going to be people, you know, that are struggling, that perhaps can't fit in and need to be, you know, find somewhere else, I guess. Harsh, isn't it? But if you can't fit in at Teepee Valley, where the hell can you fit in?
You have to be pretty far off the wacko scale, I mean. Yeah, you have to be dangerous, basically. Yeah, I'm very difficult to deal with. Like, we'll always try and assimilate someone who may be struggling a bit at first, but at the bottom they just want to live somewhere peacefully and belong somewhere and have a sense of family and take care of themselves and be part of a community.
Yeah. You
know, even if they're off the wall, that's fine.
Yeah.
We're all a bit off the wall. That's why we came, but... Yeah, you know.
I very much take the view that everyone's got to be somewhere. And since I kind of worked that out, I've been much, much more tolerant of everybody, no matter, you know, how obvious their problems are, you know, perhaps even self-made or In the world that I live in, I'm always everybody must be presumably coming across people that they just think, geez, I can't cope with that person. But you've got to kind of realise, haven't you, that they've got to be somewhere.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's really important to keep that ethos going of in the community. It's precious. And I like it here. I like the fact that it's, I mean, I haven't got the theory to back it up, but certainly your friend in the camp there, he's got lots of the theory about how this all works, but it's good that it works almost from the human heart, not from some written down law. So we're now in what was the original area of Teepee Valley, or part of it, and it was started up in 1976, as I understand, and you've picked up quite a bit of information on the history of the place in the time you've been here, and you were telling me earlier about how initially it was like a kind of, well, it was Teepee Valley. It was people living in teepees. Do you want to talk a little bit about those, some of the stories you've picked up from those early days?
Well, one of the old guys, Rick or Pete, would be definitely the best to kind of tell stories about the past and talk about the past in general.
Okay.
Yeah. So what I could say is that this place used to be a kind of tribe. And that tribe was formed around a strong sense of shared lifestyle. And anyone who came, if they wanted to live here, they had to not just live in a teepee, they had to make their own teepee. They had to cut their own poles, strip them, sand them, buy some canvas, sew the canvas, treat the canvas, and then they can move in with their teepee. After they've stayed for a while in the big lodge to kind of get used to the place and suss out if they can do that sort of lifestyle. A teepee isn't an easy dwelling. In summer, it's heaven. You can roll it up around all sides. You've got your fire in the middle. In winter, it's a challenge. It is a hardcore lifestyle. And very few people who live here now choose to live in a teepee at all. Most people have moved into yurts and roundhouses.
Yeah.
And they're more comfortable. You can have a wood burner in there, and it's not as a necessity to move. Everyone used to live in a teepee. Everyone used to come down to the Triangle and Village Field in winter and camp out in a big circle down there. And in summer, everyone used to come up here to this huge hillside, which used to be open, free of trees, more or less, and now it's a woodland.
Yeah.
Because there was no cutting green wood rule
right
from the beginning.
Right.
So that's helped regeneration. And it's a different place now. It's not a tribe like it used to be, and it's more segregated. It's very much like a village, more than a community, because there's lots of people here who don't like each other, who disagree, of very, very different philosophies about what this place should and shouldn't be. There are people here who don't like the newcomers arriving, who don't like people like me and our friends and the rainbow people, and we came off the rainbow.
Can you tell me about that? I'm not familiar with that.
The rainbow?
Mm.
Well, the rainbow started at a similar time to Teepee Valley, somewhere in the late 60s, mid 70s, something like that. And both had a certain sense of inspiration from the Native Americans. Here it was the teepees and the sweat lodge. And in the early days here, there was some visits from famous Sioux medicine man who's written books called Lame Deer, or it's Lame Deer's son, perhaps, came here and sat in sweat lodge, commented how he was amazed to say that this is probably the biggest teepee village now in the world.
Cool.
Coming from a Sioux tribe, which used to be thousands of people hunting together on the plains in teepees. And it was Chris Waits who brought the teepees to the UK. He'd learned how to make them somewhere in America. And he brought teepees to Teepee Valley. And he's buried just up in these woods, some hundreds of metres up in this direction, up the creek. Rainbow, similarly, was visited by... It was a hippies gathering in America. I don't know the details exactly, but I've been at a Mexican World Rainbow where I've sat and talked to some of the Americans who know the stories better. But the Native Americans came and they handed the talking stick over. And the only reason the rainbow is still alive and breathing, in my opinion, is because of the talking stick. And the talking stick is... It's a way of meeting together. They would call it... It was their council. I believe more than just the Americans did it. I think it's been a practice used by human beings to hold council and to communicate and to make decisions together through consensus. The rainbow's been doing that religiously now for decades. I think the two have a lot of crossover, rainbow and Teepee Valley. A lot of Teepee Valley energy has come off the back of rainbow gatherings. Manu arrived off the back of a rainbow gathering, and many others still now find out this place through going to a rainbow gathering in the UK and hearing about Teepee Valley. Only recently a flood of a couple dozen hippies came off the back of a rainbow that was in North Wales and flooded the Big Lodge for a week or two. And they're the two little cultures that I feel most connected to in our country, and that's why I find myself both trying my best to help out the rainbow and go to gatherings and help that to continue, and to be here, to want to continue the tradition here. They both have traditions that have nothing to do with the pretentious commercial exploitation kind of mentality that I see in modern festivals, even hippie festivals and hippie towns. And there's something a bit more human about this place and about rainbow gatherings too. Money doesn't matter here, really. It's not about money, it's not about popularity. Neither has an Instagram account or a YouTube channel. These are places that are very grassroots and genuine, and that's what I love about them. I feel like here I'm surrounded by real people, and I have a real opportunity to contribute in an organic way without being part of some system. There's a sense of freedom in both Rainbow and at Teepee Valley, and I wish there was more things like it. I wish the tens of thousands of people that went to festivals throughout the UK that do lots of meditation and stuff like that came and experienced a rainbow gathering, of which usually only has 50 to 100 to 150 people actually turn up to a rainbow gathering. It's because it's not publicised and you don't have to pay and there's no tickets and certainly no posters made for it. If you hear about it, you hear about it through word of mouth usually. Although I think people use WhatsApp a bit more nowadays. And same with Teepee Valley, it doesn't really express itself to the world. I know many young people just like me who are craving to find somewhere where they can live on the land and have a bit of gardening and maybe keep a couple goats and be in nature and belong in a place, in a community surrounded by people who like playing music and stuff like that. This place offers that, but in the last year or two there's been maybe 4 or 5 of us who has actually come and begun to really live here. Many people pass through. Some people say, I'm going to come back, and very few do. I don't know why that is.
I'll tell you, it's a tough life, Axel. I mean, we're in the middle of a beautiful spring / summer. It's absolutely lovely here. But even the way you're living now, I mean, you're not coming at it from the point of view of the way I don't say normal because that's bollocks, but we live in society where we've got showers and we've got kettles to make a brew and we've got, you know, it's all, we've been softened up beyond belief, where now I'm watching you guys and your, you know, your biggest jobs of the day are making breakfast and making supper. And then you've got, if you're going to get serious about this and start to try and grow your own food, which a lot of people are doing here really beautifully, there's some fabulous gardens we've seen. Yeah. And that's obviously, you aspire to that. I think that's what we're supposed to be doing as human beings. But it's to go from where the world I live in to the world that you're living in is massive, massive jump.
It's true, yeah. We do experience that. People regularly visit the Big Lodge and we have to kind of help walk them through the basics of this lifestyle. But we still really have it far easier than most people on Earth have ever had it. Even now with our metal kettles and stuff like that, that's only very recent in human history. If I had an overarching aspiration, it would be to be able to live as part of nature completely. Something that I feel naturally called to as someone who loves nature and who loves health and who loves beauty and simplicity and who doesn't like plastic, who doesn't like the fact that I'm still reliant on things I buy from civilization, even if I live here in nature. Still, all the clothes I wear I bought, I didn't make them myself. I'd like to imagine that it's still possible for a human being to derive everything they need from nature. And why not? Because humans have actually been doing that for most of our evolutionary history. Only very recently have we started to outsource the production of our own shelter, of our food, of our clothing, and of our basic tools and amenities to factories on the other side of the world, or even places that aren't on our doorstep. So I wouldn't describe this as self-sufficiency, more as a kind of developing a symbiotic relationship with the life around you. That's the natural way. That's how the forest lives. And I would like to gradually develop the skill set to live with a small group of people without relying on the products of civilization. And so Aleem making a spoon and saying it's a revolutionary act, by making a spoon itself, I see symbolically it is. But if we can then make our bowls and our clothing and our knife and axe and our water bucket and our clothes basket and our clothing and our basic agricultural tools, we're gradually honing in that you don't need very much to live in the forest. You don't need very much. We know that from anthropological research of the pygmies in the basin, the people in the Amazonian forest, the Native American tribes, the sand bushmen, the aborigines. Perhaps people lived on this island in a similar way to all of those people before some thousands of years ago when invaders came over, particularly the Roman Empire. We don't really know. We don't have much knowledge of how people lived on these islands post-Ice Age, but before empires came that developed a bigoted civilization, came and wrecked it. We don't know what it was before then. So hence, most of my inspiration is drawn by the indigenous people world over who live simple lives as part of nature and have a philosophy and a worldview that encompasses all of life and as one compassionate family that work together to perpetuate the beauty of creation in the world sphere. And my only ambition is to stand as a poetic embodiment of that philosophy again. I'm not trying to create something new. I just want to prove that it's still possible to live as part of nature without causing damage, but actually being a steward. That's someone who supports all of life to flourish whilst deriving nourishment in a symbiotic partnership with all of life as a tribe, because I think we're social animals. And so part of what us young people are trying to do with the freedom we've got at Teepee Valley, is to form a small group of people who are developing interdependence and a tight-knit familial cooperative circle that's looking after each other, communicating and pooling skills and resources in order to live less as part of the civilized world and more as a part of nature. And we're still at the very doorstep of that endeavor, really, but we're sharing a similar integral philosophy.
Yeah, I get it. I totally get it. And I mean, no one can fault you really for the low energy lifestyle that you're leading. It's what the planet needs more than anything, is people to respect that we've been far too greedy. And I absolutely take my hat off to you for that. I really do.
No, thank you.
I do. So, one thing that gives me heart and hope, Axel, is the young people of this country are way more on the ball about the situation the human race has got itself into than the older people. The older people have got deep roots, they've got their lives set up and they've been sold a pub, but they're happy with it. And young people can see straight through it. Now, what would you say, as someone who's actually gone that extra mile to enact what you think needs to happen, what would you say to those young people? What can they do to help this planet?
Well, I would suggest that they come over to West Wales, because West Wales is a region where, more than anyone else in our country, there are people who are endeavouring to actually live as sovereign members of an ecosystem rather than suckling off a civilization that's polluting, destroying and raping life on the planet. And so in West Wales, with the One Planet Development Scheme and such things like this, they're a joke really, but they're a doorway in the right direction anyway. We've got this very, very sort of organically formed and non-formal network of communities, permaculture farms, off-grid settlements, spiritual retreat centres, all to do with taking care of the earth and trying to live with respect to all of life and trying to regain a bit of dignity as human beings that have never really been separate from nature but have begun to live with the illusion as such that we can be independent people that don't need to rely on anyone or anything apart from ourselves. So what I'm interested in is less really how could we attempt to encourage the abusive political power system to change their laws to be a bit more friendly. What I'm interested in is how could we begin to come together as people and form our own culture. You could call it a counterculture, but let's say just simply our own culture of human beings within one region who are beginning to take the matters into our own hands and show a good example of how human beings can actually live beautifully and nobly as part of an ecological world, as part of the earth. And to me, that necessarily means giving up modern housing for anyone who's willing to do so. And it means giving up the technologies that we rely on that come from factories in China. And it means learning how to live simply on the earth, gaining our water with a simple container that you draw from the well or the spring, cooking with the wood from the fire, and then how do we obtain our food? How do we build basic shelters from the earth? And how do we clothe ourselves from the land? And how do we make our tools? It sounds extreme, and there's many checkpoints on that spectrum. I stand as a radical in that I'm saying, if it would be possible for us to develop a culture of obtaining more and more of our nourishment, sustenance, shelter, clothing and resources directly from symbiotic relationship with the Earth's spheres. That means natural resources that we harvest from the forest, rather than depending on modern farming, modern productions, and such and so forth. I'm tired of festivals. I'm tired of talk. I'm interested in how can we walk together into a sovereign culture that stands as emblems of an act of respect, basic retribution to the complete destruction our species has riveted into nature. So what I would suggest is there's a website called Diggers and Dreamers. There's this website and you can see a lot of communities that are in West Wales and the rest of the UK there. You can get in touch with them. You can go and visit. Teepee Valley always has an open door. But if you're really keen, just get yourself over to West Wales and start looking around. You'll meet people. You'll meet people who don't want to live as just another cog in civilization, who would like to, as what I see to be a truly revolutionary act, begin to obtain their sustenance directly from the Mother Earth, rather than the machine world that surrounds us. So that's all I can think of.
Yeah, brilliant. Yeah. Hats off to you. Hats off to you. So it's been fantastic being here for a day with you guys. Really inspiring. And I know I'm a Luddite and I know I'm an old hippie, so I'm bound to be drawn to the stuff you're doing. It's just, I can't help it. So I'm not giving them an objective view necessarily of what I've seen, because it's all stuff that's really close to my own heart. I really want to come back and see how you're doing later. Hope that's okay.
You'll be very welcome.
I've met some lovely people, and I know life's dramas happen, and you know, stuff happens to people and things change, but yeah, thanks mate.
Thank you very much as well. Yeah, I'm grateful to have interested ears.
Oh man, there's so many people that are interested. It's just finding ways.
Mm.
And that's hopefully what, you know, this kind of thing can do. Cool, actually.